Dr. Roper, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
One of the things that is always hard in the spring to know what to do is, when can you get into the garden to start digging? People have probably got their fruit trees ordered or thinking about ordering them, but how do you know when you can stick them in the ground? Can you put a bare root tree right into the ground?
Certainly can. I suppose it depends on your aversion to mud.
Yeah.
Once it dries out enough that you can get in and not get your shoes really muddy, that's a good time to begin digging.
So how do you keep from damaging the soil? How do you know it's dried out enough?
A couple of things. When the frost is out of the soil, and really good evidence of that in suburban areas is when you see worms on the sidewalks. That's a really good indication the frost is out of the soil, the earthworms are moving, and you know the frost is out then. So when you see that and the soil gets dry enough that you can pick it up and you can sort of make a snake out of it in your hand, you can't squeeze water out of the soil, but yet it's wet enough that it'll hold together. That's a really good time to get in and work the soil.
So if you can make that ball but yet with your same hand kind of crumble it as well, I mean, it holds together until you decide to crumble it. Is that a good indication?
Exactly.
Okay. So once you get into the soil, how large of a hole do you have to dig to put in a fruit tree? Now, if you were my grandmother, you would tell me it would have to be exactly 2.5 feet wide all the way around and 2 feet down, and she would measure it and make sure that I had done it exactly just right.
Well, like most academics, the answer is it depends. It depends on what kind of a fruit tree you have. And is it a potted tree or bare root? You know, potted tree, that's easy because you just need to dig a hole big enough to accommodate the size of the pot. For a bare root tree, you ought to measure the distance across from tip to tip of the root system, and your hole needs to be that wide. And then a shallow hole typically is better than a deep hole for planting fruit trees. The really important thing if you're planting apples in particular is to make sure that the graft union is above the final soil line. We don't want soil to get up on the scion, up on the cultivar part of the tree. The soil needs to be kept down onto the rootstock. And you can find that on the tree. It'll be a little crook in the shank of the fruit tree. So the rootstock will come up and you'll see a little bend. And where that bend is, that's the graft union where the rootstock and the scion were joined. And that needs to be at least 2 to 3 inches above the final soil line.
So if that gets too low, then the scion can then root itself and then you
exactly
don't get the hardiness or what you're looking for?
It's not hardiness. Most of the fruit trees that we would buy, whether it's at the big box discount stores or at local garden centers, are grafted onto a dwarfing rootstock, a size-controlling rootstock. When soil is allowed to get up around the scion will root and the dwarfing influence of the rootstock is lost. So you pay good money for a tree that you think is going to be small and will fit in your backyard, and then it ends up being a great big huge tree, and you think, oh, those dwarfing rootstocks, they don't work. Well, they do, but the secret is to not let the scion root.
So how do you know what type of rootstock to get? I've ordered from a company in the Northwest that usually does for commercial growers, but they will sell for homeowners, and there are just so many different types of rootstock. I'm assuming that each one is more dwarfing than another, or one's a little more large than another.
That's true. And unfortunately, there's no relationship between the number that might be attached to a rootstock and how big it's going to get. And, you know, a 7 is bigger than a 9, but a 26 is in between the two. So there's no rhyme or reason to it.
But for most, if you're in the store, if you see it just says semi-dwarf, are all the ones that say semi-dwarf going to be approximately the same size?
There will be some variation. If the label says semi-dwarf in the nursery or garden center, that tree's probably going to get somewhere in the 15 to 20 feet tall range and 12 or so feet wide. Where if you could find one that said dwarfing, then you're going to be in the 10 to 12 foot tall range and 8 to 10 feet in width.
So basically you're looking at the space that you're putting it into to decide how large of a tree you want.
Yes, and the space that you have in your garden to have an apple tree or a peach tree or a cherry tree.
Now, one thing that we talked a little bit about before the program was where to not put the tree in your yard, or at least things to do if you're going to, if all you've got is grass and you have to put it in the grass.
Right. Trees don't compete really well with grass. Grass is a very competitive weed. And so you want to have a vegetation-free zone around your fruit trees with a radius of 2 to 3 feet. And you can control the vegetation, primarily grass, by spraying with a non-residual herbicide like Roundup. Glyphosate is the generic form. And then spreading a 2 to 3 inch thick layer of mulch around the tree. And that'll need to be renewed every couple of years because it will decay over time. And that should do a pretty good job of keeping the weeds out of the area right around the trunk. It also prevents you from damaging the trunk of the tree with string trimmers or lawn mowers, or those kinds of things as well.
Yes, I've noticed at my parents' home, a younger sibling who was given control of the weed eater, and my dad as well, whacked a couple of the fruit trees down that I had planted just because it was just too close. Yeah. So 2 to 3 feet out from
right.
the trunk.
Yeah.
And as the tree gets larger, should that area increase?
It doesn't really need to. 2 to 3 feet seems to be optimal.
And what kind of mulch should be on there? Does it matter?
It doesn't really matter. Wood chippings, bark, all of those kinds of things are great.
Should you put any nitrogen down with it? As it's decaying, it'll take some nitrogen out of the soil.
It will. I wouldn't increase the nitrogen that you would give to your tree above what you would do normally anyway.
Okay. Well, okay. Let's back up and take a look at we were talking about grafting.
Uh-huh.
Most fruit trees are grafted.
Yes.
Okay. Is there a grafting workshop coming up anywhere soon that you know of?
Dr. Rupp in my department has been working with folks at the USU Botanical Center in Kaysville, and they've offered some propagation classes. It's a several-night series. I don't know the exact dates on those. Perhaps you do. But people who participate in this workshop learn basic skills in propagation, including grafting and budding.
Okay, well, this one isn't in Kaysville, but this one is in St. George. There's a grafting workshop on the 23rd, and it looks like there's a fee of $10 for it. It'll be at the USU Extension Office, 44 North 100 East in St. George, this Saturday from 10 to 11:30, and you'll learn how to graft apple trees, and each student will get 2 dwarf apple rootstocks with their registration. So and they'll provide some budwood. You might also bring something from your own tree to propagate. So that sounds like kind of fun if you're in St. George.
That would be fun. It's maybe just a tad late to be collecting budwood in St. George for that right now, but hopefully they put some in a refrigerator and have some wood that's still dormant.
Well, how do you grow apples in St. George? Isn't it too warm?
Probably is a little warm. It would depend on the kind of apple that you grow. Apples are grown in Arkansas and in Georgia, other similar places, but they grow a little different set of varieties than we would in Cache Valley, for example.
So that's something to talk about then. How do you know what to plant in your area? Through trial and error, I've learned that if I want to have a peach in Cache Valley, I'm going to be replanting my tree probably every 7 to 8 years because it's going to get killed. It's just cold.
Yeah, great business opportunity in Cache Valley, selling peach trees. Great market for those every year. I think the short answer is to contact your local county extension office. They'll have the experience. They probably have master gardener volunteers who are experienced gardeners in that area. And the extension office probably has some local materials for that county that would give advice about what varieties do best in which areas and what species do best in which areas.
Do you tend to generally cast a jaundiced eye at most of the big box stores, what they might be selling? I mean, some things would be good, but some things would be bad, and oftentimes they don't know.
Well, I think if you go to the big box stores prepared and you know what will grow in your local area, that's a perfectly acceptable place to purchase those. But understand that decisions may be made about what's offered for sale there in Atlanta or San Francisco. And so not everything that's there would be appropriate for that local area.
So generally, would you tell people in northern Utah, like Cache County and especially Rich and Bear Lake, to stay away from stone fruits?
For the most part, yes. Tart cherries will grow almost anywhere in the state, in the northern part of the state. They're really hardy. And some of the plums are really hardy as well, but peaches, sweet cherries, not so much.
It's always going to be a process of wondering, okay, what's going to work and how much patience have you got, basically. I mean, that's what I've found in my own garden. I put a peach up next to my barn, hoping, and on the west side, and it's also near a cement wall that I have, hoping that maybe I'll get some protection from the elements and a little bit of reflected heat.
Yeah. And, of course, the other problem in the wintertime is when we get fluctuating temperatures. It may not be the absolute cold temperature. It's that up and down variation from day to day and from day to night.
So as far as selecting cultivars for your own home, can you use taste in the store from what you pick up as what it might be in your own garden? Or will the soils affect the flavor?
The soils shouldn't affect the flavor much. You will find some differences in the length of the season, how much heat they've experienced during the course of the season. But largely in northern Utah, the issue is the length of the season. For example, in Utah County, apple growers there can grow Fuji. It's a long season apple. And in Cache County, we just plain don't have a long enough season to get those to mature.
So stay away from Fuji in Cache County, Granny Smith.
Exactly.
Now, I do have an early Fuji that I discovered, and the flavor is pretty much just like a regular Fuji, and I love the tree. So,
yeah, there are a couple of earlier Fuji. Yataka is one.
Well, you're listening to The Zesty Garden, and our guest is Dr. Terrell Roper. He's the head of the Department of Plant, Soils, and Climate at Utah State University and a former Wisconsin Fruit Extension Specialist. If you'd like to join our conversation, the toll-free number is 1-800-826-1495, or you can send us an email question. It's zestygarden@gmail.com. So I wanted to talk specifically, since this is the best time of year to do it, about pruning a fruit tree. And you prune stone fruits different than you would, say, a palm fruit, like an apple or a pear. So what's the first thing you're going to look at when you go out into your garden?
I'd look at a couple of different things. And maybe we should talk first about apples and pears, and then we'll talk about peaches and cherries. For any of the fruit trees, though, I would first take a step back and look at it. And during the dormant season is the best time to make that assessment. And you want to look and see if light can make it into the interior of the canopy. Pruning is really all about managing light, about getting light into the interior of the tree and about capturing as much light as you can, because that's where you get your production. Really, we're not farming the soil or gardening the soil. We're really farming and gardening sunlight. That's really what we're about, is capturing sunlight, and that's how we're going to grow fruit.
So is it that you're wanting the leaves to get the sunlight and not the fruit necessarily?
Right.
Okay.
That's sunlight striking the leaves is what we're after. So as you look at that tree, as you take a step back and look at it, you should be able to not see a lot of crossing and busy branches. You should see windows where light could get into the interior of the canopy. And you can assess that now even when there aren't leaves on the tree. So I would first, depending on the age of the tree, young trees, it's about shaping the tree, about having a vision for what you want that to look like when it's 10 or 15 years old. But for a mature tree, you probably want to select two or three largish cuts that you'd want to make, and make those first, and then do the detail pruning. So you'd prune off any branches that are hanging downwards, the pendant branches, because they'll be shaded. You want to prune out one of crossing branches or branches that might rub against one another. So we don't want that rubbing. In an apple tree, you'd want to look for the presence of water sprouts, and those are strong upright shoots in the interior of the canopy, probably associated where a large pruning cut had been made in the past. You want to prune those out, And then about June, you want to rub those off again as they're...
Because you'll see the little starts trying to come up around where that cut was.
Exactly. So when they're really soft and and tender in the summer, those can just be rubbed off really easily. And that's the best time to deal with those. But if you've got them now, because they're going to grow straight up, and wood that's growing straight up is vegetatively vigorous but not very fruitful. So we want to get rid of those. And then you might want to look at branches that are growing straight up that might be pushed out away from vertical towards horizontal. And if you can insert a stick that's notched on either end that would spread those branches out, and you want to do that a little carefully so you don't break the crotch, but push those out towards horizontal, and that will encourage fruitfulness, not for 2013, unfortunately, but for 2014 and beyond. So for a young apple or peach tree, pear tree, we want to spread those branches out and get a good structure beginning for the tree.
So you want to have a central leader to the tree and then having the branches come off of that central leader.
Exactly. So one strong vertical axis, central leader in the tree, and then the other branches coming off almost horizontal from that. So think pine tree, not umbrella.
So why did that change? It seemed if you've got an older apple in your yard, it was more of the vase sort of system, and then it went to central leader, what, about 20 years ago?
20 or 30 years ago. It's really when horticulturists started to think about light and about how to capture light and get it distributed through the canopy more uniformly.
So how does an apple tree do that better central leader versus a peach with the vase system?
Yeah, peaches are a little different critter. And it really goes back to the difference in fruiting habit. Apples and pears bear fruit terminally in mixed buds, where peaches and cherries bear fruit laterally. And peaches bear fruit on one-year-old wood. So shoots that grew in 2012, that's where we're going to get fruit production in 2013. So peaches tend to be pruned more harshly. We cut more severely to encourage new growth to develop in 2013 that will produce our crop in 2014.
So if we tried to do that with an apple tree, we'd be cutting off?
We'd be cutting off the fruiting wood and encouraging a lot of vegetative growth, and we wouldn't get the fruit that we want. So better to hold off a little bit, be a little conservative on apples. And if you really enjoy pruning, get a peach tree because you can really go after it.
So how do you know when you've cut too much? I know if you've I think it was the first year I was over at my aunt's house. She had quite a few trees that hadn't been pruned in quite a while, and I'm pretty sure I got 50 to 60% on a couple of those trees. And the next year I learned, okay, I don't do that because she had just water sprouts all over the place.
Yeah, and part of that is, let me put it this way. Most fruit trees have a lifespan of somewhere in the 20 to 25 year range. Now, I know that there are fruit trees that are older than that, but what happens when they get old is they have a large investment in wood, and that comes at the expense of fruit. So once we get those old trees, rather than trying to rejuvenate them, it's probably best to just replant. Smoke some fish this summer. Apple wood is pretty good for that.
So, but if that tree's been in there for so long, I mean, I think it's genetic in my family. It's hard for me to just cut something out.
Well, you need to go to that propagation class, and you can take budwood off of that tree, have it grafted onto a dwarfing rootstock, and you'll have a tree that's genetically identical to the old tree that you're replacing.
This is sort of related, but mostly off topic. My grandparents used to throw their peach pits out, and they let one of them grow, and it actually turned out to be a fairly good peach. It was not what they would call a spitter by any means, and yeah. I want to go back to their home and see if that tree is still there because I want to cut it off. His name was Leroy and her name was Helen, and they called it a Helroy peach. So I want to take a cutting off of that peach and put it onto one of mine, but it's so iffy. Maybe I should find a relative in Salt Lake or Davis County to have better luck with that. Do peaches tend to graft better than apples, or does it really make any difference?
Apples are pretty easy to bud, actually, the way those are propagated. Peaches are not difficult. The process is a little different. Cherries are pretty difficult.
Well, we have our first question. It's from Greg in Logan. He says, if I want to purchase a tree, is the tree more likely to survive with the bare root system or ball and burlap?
Really, either one is fine. The ball and burlap is the Cadillac, because you get all that root mass from the nursery that you take home with you. You'll probably pay a little more money for that. But right now, bare root trees are readily available, both mail order and in local garden centers, maybe a little early at local garden centers. And depending on where you live, you want a ship date sometime in April, maybe early May. And the mail order nurseries get pretty good about when those trees ought to be shipped according to your zip code. So they should arrive at roughly the right time. And then once your soil dries out enough, you could get them in the ground. So either one, a bare root or a ball and burlap or a containerized tree. The containerized trees will get almost entirely through the summer, and they can just be taken home and planted.
So I'm curious, with the revamping of the USDA zones a couple years ago, if you've seen generally that the catalogs have finally gotten it right for Cache County, because it seemed like they were always putting us down as zone 6, and I could never figure that out, because then I would get my fruit tree or whatever I had ordered the first part of April, and I'd have to try to find some way to heal it in or to put it in my basement. And then I finally figured out, well, I could just tell them this is the date when I want it shipped.
Yeah. You know when is a good time to have a shipping date. I mean, in Cache County, you're probably early May. Along the Wasatch Front, late April, pretty good guess.
But the key is that once you do get it in the ground right away.
Yes, unless you have a place where you can keep it cold, like a walk-in cooler, you need to get it in the ground.
Okay. Well, I've strayed us a little bit, so let's get back to pruning. So you've got your apple. How far up should you make your first? So you've got a fairly new tree, a fairly young tree. How far up should you have your first set of branches? Or should it be more in a, I mean, do you have it all on the same level, those three or four branches? Or do you put them kind of stair-stepping up the trunk?
Well, biologically, you won't get them all coming out at identically the same place. Apple trees just won't do that. But you do want them.
You can get them pretty close.
Yeah, you want them spread out a little bit, over maybe 6 inches, 8 inches along the trunk. But let's back up a little bit. It really depends on what that tree looks like when you get it from the nursery, because it can be branched or unbranched. If it's an unbranched tree, the height at which you make your heading cut when you plant it will determine the height of the lowest branches. So in a residential setting where you're going to be mowing kind of close to the tree, I would probably want the lower branches at 30 inches or higher. Now, if it were a commercial orchard, we'd want it about 24 inches. You know, maybe at home you want it 36 inches. It's easier to get in and work around it. But you determine that by where you make the cut.
But it's okay to have it that high.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Unless, of course, it's a really dwarfing rootstock, and then, or does that make any difference?
Doesn't make any difference. It'd be just as happy.
Okay. And so with the apples, how far up then should be the next branch?
So you have your lower tier of scaffold branches, and those will be semi-permanent branches that will come out, and they'll bear fruit low down. And then you want another 2 feet or so before you have another whorl or layer of branches. And that will come a year or two down the road when you'd want to have those. So you'd probably need to rub off or cut out some branches along that central leader in between those two, so you get some space. And again, it's about getting light into the interior of the tree.
In your experience, you've probably seen a lot of creative ways of making sure that branches grow out straight. Mm-hmm. I like to use clothespins, mm-hmm, on those new little shoots coming out, and depending on how big that little shoot is, I do maybe one, two, or even three hanging down. And I had one tree I put in, and it looked pretty funny because there were clothespins all over it. But it worked really well, and I just kept working those out. I had a friend around the corner who had a little bit bigger tree and used stones, not large ones, but hanging them off of the branch to try to get it to bend down. Someone else used tent stakes and tied tied the branches to the ground. So there's all different kinds of methods.
Yeah, all of those work. When a tree is very young, say if you were going to plant a tree in 2013, and this is particularly true for apples and pears, when those new branches come out and they're really tender and succulent, you can take a spring-type clothespin and attach it to the central leader of the tree and push those branches down while they're young and tender. And that creates a very nice wide crotch angle that will be strong, stronger than if the branches come out with a narrow crotch angle. And it only takes about 3 weeks, and the branches then will remain at that point. Then, like you said, when the branches get older, you can take clothespins and, using some construction adhesive, you can glue those onto rocks. And all you want is the weight to weigh those branches down. Or you can fill a Dixie cup with concrete and put a little loop of wire in that, and you can use a clothespin to hang that on. Or if you wanted to use soft wire, you could just put a little hook of that in the concrete and then leave a 12 or 15-inch pigtail on that, and you could wrap that spiral, not close wrap, around the branch. And depending on how far out on the branch you hang that weight will determine how far down it droops. Obviously, the further out, the more pressure it exerts.
And you want to have good crotch angles, whether it's a stone fruit or a pear or peach. Because I've seen, especially peaches, if it happens to be a heavy year, trees that just the whole branch just completely breaks off.
Yeah, and that's, you're right. You want to have the wide crotch angles regardless of what the crop is. But if the branch is drooping down that far, that branch probably needed to be thinned.
Yeah.
And that
yeah.
needs to be done early in the season. And peaches, you don't want fruit any closer together than about 4 to 6 inches. So when you have two peaches arising on a branch at the same place, and biologically that's what they want to do, one of those has got to go.
Because they're trying to produce as many seeds as possible.
Exactly.
But we're trying to get as many big peaches as possible. For me, I'm thinking canning. I want to have big peaches, not too much hanging on that branch. And does that improve flavor at all, or does that make much difference?
I'm not sure it makes a lot of difference. If a tree is overcropped, it takes longer for the sugar to develop in the fruit, to get translocated there. Where if it's appropriately cropped, they'll mature just a little bit sooner.
Okay. Something that's popping into my mind here is, I don't know if we really answered it, was how much should we not prune in one particular year? Is there a percentage, like no more than 25%?
That would probably be a good place to begin. It really depends. If the tree's been pruned annually and is in good shape, probably 25% would be too much. On a tree that maybe has been neglected and needs some attention, maybe 25 to 30, 35% might be okay in 1 year. But then in subsequent years, you'd want to hold back and not be quite so aggressive.
And do you need to put anything in with, if you're doing a new tree planting, should you put anything in with it, such as any kind of fertilizer, or just kind of let it get established, water it really well, of course?
Yeah, that's a question that I hear a lot. And no, you really ought to fill the soil back in with the unamended soil. Because people talk about putting compost and manure and those kinds of things in to kind of soften that soil up. But what you do by doing that is create a pan where water can collect, because that soil is going to be more porous than the soil around it. So when you dig the hole to plant your tree, put the tree in, you want to fill it back in with the same soil that you excavated. And then you probably want to give it a light application of fertilizer over the top and then water that in. And watering is the really, really critical thing.
So do you do a slow drip, or how do you know how much?
Typically, you want to build some kind of a shallow reservoir around the tree, so 4 inches or so above. Just mound the soil up in a ring around the tree out a foot or so. And I would say you'd want to put 3 or 4 gallons of water on a newly planted tree right all at once. And then that tree probably needs to be watered twice a week through that first summer. And if it's in a lawn area and the sprinklers are on, that tree probably still needs some additional water beyond what the lawn is getting to get it down deep enough to encourage the roots to go downwards.
You're listening to The Zesty Garden. My guest is Dr. Terrell Roper. He's head of the Department of Plant, Soils, and Climate at Utah State University and a former Wisconsin Fruit Extension Specialist. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back for the rest of the hour. If you have any questions or comments, our toll-free number is 1-800-826-1495. That's 800-826-1495. Or you can send us an email question. It's zestygarden@gmail.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Waste not. Use the garbage disposal sparingly. Compost vegetable food waste instead and save gallons every time.
Waste Not is made possible by the Logan City Public Works Water Conservation Department. Information at loganutah.org/publicworks.
Did you know that school trust lands have been around since 1765? These are lands set aside so they can generate funds to benefit students. Utah's trust lands generated $89 million in 2011, and 88% of that money was invested in a permanent school fund.
Did You Know That is made possible by the USU Emma Eccles Jones College of Education and Human Services. More at cehs.usu.edu.
Are you deadline-driven, most productive as zero-hour approaches? Well, what about the ultimate end, the true end of the time frame? Deadline indeed. How does knowing that you're going to die affect your life? I'm Jim Fleming. Next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge, we're minding mortality. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday mornings at 9 on Utah Public Radio.
Welcome back to The Zesty Garden. I'm your host, Brian Earle, and in our gardening calendar, I wanted to make you aware of a couple of items. A couple of pruning workshops. If you're in Cedar City, there is one this Friday from 10 a.m. to noon. It's at the USU Iron County Extension Office. The Visitor Center is where it will start at 581 North Main Street in Cedar City. And there's a $3 cost for that, but USU Extension experts will show you the art and science of proper pruning practices so you'll be able to prune with confidence. And this will include pruning shade trees and shrubs and cleaning up perennials and ornamental grasses for the spring. There's also a pruning 101 workshop at the Ogden Botanical Gardens. It's a week from Saturday, March 30th, from 9 a.m. to noon. And the address is 1750 Monroe Boulevard in Ogden. And it looks like it's a free workshop, so it's open to anyone. The garden staff and master gardeners will demonstrate proper pruning practices to care for fruit trees, deciduous and evergreen trees, shrubs, and roses. Then there's an Explore the Garden Family Night at the USU Botanical Center in Kaysville. That is this coming Monday from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m., and that's 920 South 50 West in Kaysville. And it says, step out into the cold and into the warmth of the greenhouse and learn the science behind starting seeds indoors. Collect tips on soil mixes, light and heat requirements, watering and transplanting in this hands-on activity. And it's get the entire family involved in preparing for the garden. There's a landscape design class at the Botanical Center as well in Kaysville, 9 a.m. to noon. And I'm just looking at this, and I can't find a date on it. I should look this a little bit ahead of time, but I think that one is coming up fairly quick. And if I get a date on that, I'll let you know what that is. And then backyard beekeeping, USU Iron County Extension and the Central Iron County Water Conservancy District is presenting this. It's on Friday, April the 5th, from 10 a.m. to noon in Cedar City. There's a cost of $3. For master gardeners and $5 for the general public. And you'll learn about how to keep bees in your backyard. This landscape design class I was just telling you about, it's a weekly event. It's every Wednesday from 9 a.m. to noon at the Kaysville USU Botanical Center. Well, we're talking about fruit, and I have Dr. Terrell Roper, head of the Department of Plant, Soils, and Climate at Utah State University, former Wisconsin Fruit Extension Specialist. And we were just discussing ahead of time a little bit about pruning. We've been talking the last half hour about pruning. And now we have a question from Rebecca. She wants to know, how, when, how much do you prune apricot trees?
Now's a really good time to prune apricot trees or any fruit trees because they've been dormant. They're coming out of dormancy. Pruning is invigorating, and it's okay to invigorate a tree this time of year. Apricots would be pruned very similar to plums and cherries, though apricots and plums bear on spurs on two-year-old and older wood for the most part. So you don't want to prune them as aggressively as you would a peach tree, because we really need to encourage that new growth every year on peaches. But sort of the same strategy. Take a step back and look at the tree and make sure that there are windows where light can get into the interior of the canopy. So if you've got a really busy canopy someplace, you need to reduce the number of branches there. Now, one other thing I should have mentioned in this regard, there are really two basic kinds of pruning cuts. Now, of course, there are variations on the theme, but they're either thinning cuts or heading cuts. Let me explain the difference between the two. A thinning cut, you remove a branch back to its point of origin. So you remove the entire branch. And that's the better kind of pruning cut. The other kind of pruning cut is a heading cut, where you would remove a part of a branch, maybe half of current season growth, so that you're leaving part of the branch. Those tend to be a less desirable pruning cut. So as you look at that apricot tree, you want to see first, can I make some thinning cuts? Can I remove some entire branches? And once you've done some of that, then maybe some heading cuts as a follow-up.
So with peaches and stone fruits in general, mm-hmm. it is a different pruning system as opposed to the apples. You're wanting to have the more open?
Yeah, the peaches in particular are, well, commercially they're grown in various ways, but kind of an open center, multiple leader system. Apricots, though, could be trained very similar to an apple tree with a central leader and whorls of scaffold branches, lateral branches coming off from that central trunk.
So if you're doing the peach, then how do you get that started if you've got a new tree?
Well, the first cut is that heading cut when the tree is planted, where we determine the height of the lowest branches if it's an unbranched tree, and peaches generally are. So that's going to be 30 to 40 inches above the soil line. And from that, you'll get three or four lateral branches that will emerge from the buds below where you've made the cut. Typically, the one that's furthest up is going to want to grow straight up, and the ones below that are going to grow out more horizontally. So in the second year, if you remove that branch that's trying to grow straight up and retain the branches that are growing out horizontally, then that's where that open vase system really develops. Or you could wait 3 or 4 years, get some fruit up in the middle, and then cut the middle out. Either one works.
Do you still have to thin apricots like you would a peach?
Depends on your aversion to small apricots. And it depends on how you're going to use them. If you're going to dry them, for example, maybe you want lots of small apricots. If you wanted them to eat fresh, the thinning them would be a good idea, and then you'll get larger fruit. But you'll never get apricots that are the size of peaches, no matter how much you thin them. That genetically, they're not going to go there.
I know with apples, another reason why you have to thin is to make sure your tree doesn't go into this every other year bearing. One year you get apples, and the next year you hardly get anything or nothing. Does that also happen with stone fruits?
It does. The risk we always run with apricots is they flower so early in the spring that they're very prone to crop loss from spring frosts. So we do sometimes get in that biennial bearing situation with apricots. You freeze one year, so no crop. The next year, the tree produces a lot of flowers, and if it's a kind spring, then you get a lot of apricots that are produced. And that's the year when you really need to go in and thin that crop down. And that will encourage flowering the next year. They're not quite as biennial bearing prone as apples or pears are, but they will go into that sort of a cycle.
And certain varieties seem to be worse than others. Like a Jonna Gold that I did cut down and get rid of just was terrible. It just seemed like no matter what I did with it, it would try to go every other year.
Yes, and we had corresponded about Honeycrisp apples, and that's a real problem with Honeycrisp. They're strongly biennial bearing, and if you don't thin them more than you think you ought to, they'll biennial bear.
Well, and the other thing that I've been learning over the years is that, yeah, I can thin, but if I don't do it early enough, the tree has already decided what it's going to put on for the next year. So how do you know when to do that thinning?
It really relates to when flowering is. So the ideal time for thinning any of our tree fruit crops is within about 2 weeks of petal fall. So once the petals are starting to fall off the flowers, then you've got about 2 weeks to get that crop off. So if you wait a month or later, it's too late and the tree's already programmed.
So those are going to be pretty small fruits.
They are. They're tiny. And you just have to get in and remove them. Now, commercially, there are some really fun things that commercial growers are doing. They have this in California peaches, for example, they're working with I'll call it a gigantic string trimmer, a big bar with lines that come off of it that spins. And so they'll drive that along the orchard, and the strings will knock the flowers off of the branches. But we don't really need to do that here. We can just by hand remove the fruit. And again, you want fruit no closer together than about 4 to 6 inches, regardless of the type of fruit we're talking about.
So if we've waited until June, it's too late.
It's too late.
Okay. And does that work the same for both stone fruits and palm fruits?
It does. Yeah, that's okay. The one place where they're similar.
Well, we only have about 8 minutes left in the program. If you'd like to get in a question or comment, our toll-free number is 1-800-826-1495. Or you can send us a question via email. The address is zestygarden@gmail.com. Well, the one thing we haven't talked about as far as pruning, and I wanted to make sure we got to this first, before the end of the program anyway, was talking about pruning grapes. And I remember when I first started pruning grapes that I would see dripping coming from the ends of the cuts, and I'd get all concerned about that. And then someone told me, oh, you've got to prune 80 to 90% of your crop, and I didn't want to do that much. But, you know, grapes are kind of a beast unto themselves as far as pruning. So
they are. And if I were to try to generalize about the mistakes that gardeners make about pruning grapes, it is that they don't prune enough. They leave too many buds. And particularly on a grapevine that's not been pruned annually, the fear is always I'm going to damage the vine by pruning too much. And that's not really accurate.
So unlike a fruit tree that you don't want to prune too much, with the grape, you can do quite a bit.
Yeah, you can
prune. Even with an established and an old vine that hasn't been pruned for a while.
Yeah, and on an old vine, you're probably better off to forego a year's crop and prune it really heavily. Now, how you go about pruning the grape is a little different depending on the type of grape that it is. Most of the grapes that are happy here in Utah, you want to leave at least five buds or about five buds on a cane. You don't want to leave more than that because that's where the fruiting nodes are.
So if I've got the trunk coming up a support, mm-hmm. am I going to have two different levels?
You might.
Okay.
I think most grapevines that I've seen in people's backyards, the trunk comes up and then there are cordons that come out horizontally from that. And then there are canes that come off of the cordons. And on those canes, then you want to prune those back to about five, maybe six buds. And the rest of it can just come off. So that totally, the number of buds that you would have on that grapevine might be in the 50 to 60 to 70
for the
range,
for the whole plant.
Yeah.
So you call those cordons that come off
yes.
on the side. And how long should those cordons be?
About 3 or 4 feet on either side of the trunk.
Okay. And I'm imagining that you're doing a renewal pruning with that each year, so it's not always the same cordon that's coming off. Maybe you're promoting another one coming off and then prune the old one off. How does that work?
No, the cordons are permanent. They stay there, and then off of the sides of the cordon, not going either direction, there will be canes coming. So some of those canes that come off will be the fruiting wood for this year, and then other ones could be pruned back harder as renewal spurs that might only have two buds that will produce the canes that you'll cut off to 5 or so buds for next year. And the ones that fruited this year, you'll cut back harder.
So those cordons are going to be permanent?
Yes.
And they're going to be, you said, two to three feet?
On either side of the trunk.
On either side. And then how many buds on that cordon?
On each cordon, you'd probably have 5 or 6 canes that would be fruiting canes, 5 or 6 renewal spurs. So you get that on each side. And so when you count the number of buds that you would leave, again, you're in that 50 to 60 range total. And that will give enough crop for that grapevine. And this is a better system. You might have more plants than having one trunk that comes up and a cordon that goes 6 feet out on either side, because there just isn't that much strength and the ability of that root system to get water and get it up into the fruit is limited. And so when you overtax the roots and the trunk, you don't get as good of a result as if you had more vines that were smaller.
So I could conceivably then plant my grapes only about, what?
6 feet.
4 to 6 feet apart?
About 6 feet apart.
Okay. So have more plants, but just shorter vines.
Yes.
You say makes it more productive.
Right.
And does it make any difference as far as the grape, the type of grape that you plant? I know my Concord, we juice a ton, so we like to have the Concord. There's I think it's Reliance, a red grape that just has humongous clusters, but I wouldn't want to have it straight because it's super sweet. So maybe we mix in a little bit of that. As far as pruning, does it make any difference the variety that you grow?
It does, but not among those two. They're both in this group. Where in St. George, for example, if people were growing Thompson seedless, that's a little different. You might want to leave 7 buds on Thompson seedless.
So a little more.
A little more.
Now, I again, it's trial and error. I found that Thompson just don't do very well in Cache County.
No, they probably aren't very happy in the winter, and then we don't get enough heat to mature them here.
And I found that with them, that I can get them to grow back, or at least the green grapes in general just tend not to do really well here, but I've been able to get them to grow back. But they usually die back to the ground, and then I have to start all over again.
Right. And Thompson seedless, it's a Vinus vinifera type, a European grape type, and they're native to the Mediterranean area, and it's a lot warmer there than it is here. And that's why they're grown in California, and that's why we don't have a table grape industry in Utah.
Now, the nice thing is that with the cooler nighttime temperatures, when they set in, that tends to make them a little bit more, as I've learned from Dan Dross, at least with melons, if you can get them to grow in Cache Valley and do well with them, they really sweeten up really, really well.
In the fall, once it gets cool. Yeah.
Well, okay, so it's okay then to have your pruning cuts dripping the sap.
That's just water, hydrostatic pressure coming up from the soil, and not to be concerned, the life blood of the grapevine is not dripping out on the ground. It's just okay.
And that will heal up pretty quick.
Yeah, it'll heal up without any problems. One other thing we ought to mention talking about pruning, though, many people want to protect the pruning cuts, particularly if they've made a large one. The temptation is always to put some kind of a wound dressing over those pruning cuts. And I advise against doing that. We really want those cuts to dry out. And then the tree will grow over those cuts and will heal, for lack of a better word, over the cuts. And when we put some kind of a wound coat dressing on those, all we're really succeeding in doing is keeping water in that cut And that creates an entry point for diseases and insects to get in, where if we just let it alone and let it dry out, the tree will protect itself.
Well, and the younger trees seem to heal that over quite rapidly.
Very quickly, within a season or two.
And as far as placement for grapes, kind of the same with fruit trees. Don't necessarily put them within the grass or have grass growing up close to them.
Right. You don't want to have grass growing right up or any vegetation right up around fruit plants. Those weeds are competitive.
And as far as the trellising system, I guess that depends on the type of grape?
It depends on the type of grape. It depends on how knowledgeable the grower is and how much time they want to devote to that. Really, a single wire at about 5 feet is sufficient. It'll support the cordons, and that's really what the wire is about.
So if you decide to put a couple of levels instead of just one, you just have to keep in mind, okay, no more than 40 to 50
total,
no matter what you do with your trellising system.
And I'm not really keen on those. They're called NIFIN systems, where you have two sets of cordons, one high and one low, because the leaves come and canes off of the upper cordon are always going to shade
the lower
cordon. And remember, we're all about sunlight.
And as far as getting that light in, if you do a row of grapes, should you be doing it north to south, or does that make much difference?
It really doesn't make that much difference. North to south would be preferred, but east to west is just fine too. It really depends on how your garden is situated. And you just have to make the best use of the space that you have available to you.
Okay. And if I were talking about Concord, because that seems to be one that gets grown quite a bit, is there, in 30 seconds, is there much of a difference in the hardiness between the seedless variety and just the regular?
In general, the seeded grapes are hardier than the seedless type grapes.
Okay. That's good information, because I'm buying some more Concord grapes.
Good for you.
Well, thank you for joining us on the program.
My pleasure. Happy to be here.
You've been listening to The Zesty Garden. Our guest has been Dr. Terrell Roper, head of USU's Department of Plants, Soils, and Climate, and a former Wisconsin Fruit Extension specialist. Thank you for listening to The Zesty Garden. We'll be back again next week at 10 o'clock on Thursday.
The Gardening Show is produced by Shalane Smith Needham and Brian Earle. To listen to past programs or get additional information about the show, just go to upr.org. The Gardening Show is a production of Utah Public Radio. You're listening to KUSR HD1 Logan, KUSK HD1 Vernal, KUSL HD1 Richfield, KUST HD1 Moab, and KUSU FM HD1 91.5 Logan.